your decision to start a new Buddhist movement came in the slipstream of your in a way virtual ostracization by the established British Buddhist world, the Buddhist Society, the English Sangha Trust. I just wonder how you felt in those days, whether it was something that you could just look on quite dispassionately as, well, people do get upset and these things happen in the midst of conditioned existence, or whether it was actually quite a painful time.
I don't think it was very painful for me as far as I remember. I think it was more disappointment, because I was thinking, well, among, say, Buddhists in the East who were born into it, one might expect those sort of things. But here are people who have entered into Buddhism voluntarily. They've, so to speak, been converted. And I think I therefore had expected a much higher standard of them. And I therefore was disappointed when they didn't, so far as I could see, live up to that standard, and even behave in a way which was quite un-Buddhistic. But I also saw very clearly that this is an opportunity. And I think that outweighed other considerations. Because I think I've mentioned in the latest volume of memoirs that even when I was at the Hampstead Vihara, well, I was exploring the possibility of doing things in a different way. But it didn't seem possible at that time. And had I tried to start up something on my own, I would have been accused of creating a schism in the already quite small Buddhist movement in Britain, and mainly in London. But here I was, I had been invited to start up a new Buddhist movement.
Well, but did the conditions surrounding that decision give any particular extra fire to your decision to start a new movement? Do you think it made you more determined than you might otherwise have been, or even more bloody-minded than you might otherwise have been, or ambitious?
Well, emotion certainly was involved. Huh? I certainly didn't start up the movement just to spite certain people. But I must admit, I felt certainly rather satisfaction of being able to function successfully without their support. I could say I didn't need it.
I mean, you were starting the FWBO at quite a special time. I mean, it was a special time and maybe a special opportunity. It was London in the mid-60s. Were you aware of to what extent British culture was in flux and almost a new kind of person was beginning to emerge, potentially a new kind of follower?
Well, I'm not so sure that I was aware of that. Of course, I knew that things had changed in Britain in many respects since I last saw it, which was during the war. And of course, yes, I was aware that there were, what shall I say, alternative people around. Though, of course, the first members of the movement and of the order can't be put within that category. No. They were all, or nearly all, quite middle-aged, respectable people holding down conventional jobs. And, of course, when it emerged that I had in mind something a bit more revolutionary than they were prepared for, they dropped away.
In those days, you grew your hair long, you wore rings, you didn't wear your robes all the time. And I suppose I'm wondering whether this was simply representative of something happening in you, or whether there was an element of PR, of making signs to this generation.
No, don't think there was anything of that sort. I just did it because I felt like doing it. I have to admit that. If there was any sort of signal, is connected with the fact of my coming to the conclusion, or coming more firmly to the conclusion, that, as I later put it, going for refuge was primary and lifestyle was secondary. It's also connected with the fact that I'd established an order for both men and women, an order which was neither lay nor monastic. So I didn't want to identify myself with the monastic side, nor with the lay side. So in order, I suppose, not to identify myself with the monastic side, I let my hair grow, which monks don't do. And in order to identify myself with the monastic side, I continued sometimes wearing my robes. So if it was a statement at all, and I think this was fairly conscious on my part, it's that I'm neither a monk nor a layman.
The FWBO, among other things, gave you increasingly over time a platform from which you could speak out. You know, you could through your published writings, which we could publish, through the talks that we could organise, and so on. You were able to articulate your critique of some aspects of traditional Buddhism, or for that matter, of Western culture. My impression is that that's always been quite important to you, to have a platform.
Yes, I think it is important to have a platform, so to speak. I found even at the Hampstead Vihara, it really does help to have a constant audience, that the same people coming and listening to you week after week, month after month, you are able to develop your ideas. So I think from that point of view, it was important to me to have a platform, because platform means an audience. And certainly in the course of my lectures and writing within the FWBO, I have felt that I was addressing an audience. I didn't aim for a wider audience. If the wider audience overheard me, well, so much the better. But basically, I'm concerned with these people, some of whom did become my disciples. I was concerned with them and with their personal development. And I therefore addressed topics as I thought would be of assistance and inspiration to them.